I'm still not exactly sure how I found myself hurtling down a bobsleigh run upside down at over 60 miles an hour, with a drunken aristocrat giggling as he skidded along behind me, but I certainly know how it started. My great friendship with Barry Sheen had brought me into circles I would never normally have moved in, as we rubbed shoulders and other parts of our bodies with the great and good of high society in swinging London. Since meeting Barry a couple of years earlier, my life had suddenly become very, very interesting, and this was only the start. It was the mid-1970s, and Barry, of course, was a huge celebrity, a world champion, and the face of every marketing campaign, from Texaco engine oils to Brute aftershave. And in his slipstream was me, his soon-to-be teammate and partner in crime, Stephen James Parrish, a farmer's son from Steeple Morden, Cambridgeshire. And trust me, it wasn't a bad place to be. Barry's slipstream, that is. I used to say it was like being in Alice in Wonderland, and they weren't all called Alice. Piers Weld Forrester was blue-blooded, the grandson of the 5th Marquess of Ormond and 24th in line for the throne. He was so well connected to the royal family that he'd even dated Princess Anne. Piers had a really flash townhouse on Waterford Road in Chelsea, right near the football ground, which must have been worth millions even then. We all had a key and we'd go down there for a week at a time, just hanging out together and having a load of fun. The house had at least 5 or 6 bedrooms, one which was called room number 7, which was Barry's, of course. Back then, you could do whatever you wanted in London, drive around at 90 mile an hour, park wherever you pleased, and of course, the nightlife was absolutely fantastic. We used to eat at a restaurant called 235 on the King's Road, and we were all regular patrons of Tramp, an exclusive members-only nightclub on Jermyn Street, which was very much the place to be at the time. It's fair to say that Piers liked to live fast, and despite his wealth and his Harrow education, he was most intoxicated by the unique thrill of racing motorcycles, which is how we first came to meet at Snetterton in 1976. His bike, a 750 Yamaha TZ, was quite worthy of the world championship, but here he was racing at the Newmarket Club's local races. It was during that season that I would become British champion for the first time myself, and when Barry introduced us, I was only too happy to help Piers out with his racing. As a rider, he would improve as time went on. He even started racing in some of the international events I was competing in, although the truth is that he wasn't very fast. We used to joke that Piers couldn't ride out of sight on a dark night, but we all loved him. He was a wonderful character, and like everybody else, I just enjoyed being around him. Even though on paper he was a millionaire, Piers was what I called a trustafarian, asset rich but never seemed to have any cash. All of the wealth he had was tied up, although he was able to get paid for attending the House of Lords, 100 quid a day just for turning up and sitting at the back. So that's exactly what he would do, usually passing the money straight on to an engine tuner called Roger Keane to pay for a new piston crankshaft or something else for his race bike, which he kept in a garage underneath the house in Chelsea. He also had a van for his racing, a 10-year-old Ford Transit twin-wheeler, which he ran on red diesel. He would have the diesel delivered for the central heating in the house, which somebody else must have been paying for. Then he'd siphon it off for his van. Piers seemed to know every single scam in the book, and over the next 12 months, I would learn them all, soaking everything up like a sponge and loving every minute of it. But in the winter of 1976, I didn't think much of it when he invited me off for an all-expenses-paid 2-week skiing holiday in Eagles near Innsbruck. I'd never been skiing before. In fact, I'd hardly ever been out of the country before. So this sounded like an opportunity too good to miss. "All you've got to do, Stavros," he said, as we set off to Dover in the Transit, "is pretend you can drive a bobsleigh when we get there." I pictured a big group of lads mucking around on toboggans in some fancy ski resort, and I rubbed my hands at the thought of it. When we got to the port, Piers admitted that the ferry booking was actually for one person and a small car, so I took the hint to jump under a blanket in the back of the van while he negotiated our passage on board. As soon as we left the dock, we headed straight for the lorry driver's canteen, where, wearing his Scania jacket for extra effect, Piers claimed he'd left his meal voucher in the truck and ordered himself a free serving of bacon and eggs. When he wanted to, Piers could really talk the lorry driver's lingo, despite his silver-spooned upbringing. We made regular stops as we headed across Europe to buy red diesel from local farmers, or else we simply siphoned it off from any tractors or diggers left unattended. We had local currency, but I'm sure anything we did spend came out of my pocket. I was confused and amazed in equal measures by Piers and his manner, which it seemed could help him get away with anything, but I was so green back then I just went along with it. Once into Germany, we stopped off in Frankfurt at a really swanky hotel. Of course, there were no mobile phones back then, so slipping back into his more natural persona of refined English gent, Piers politely told the receptionist that he would be checking in, but first of all he had some urgent telephone calls to make, if they could kindly provide him with a line. With that old Harrovian accent of his, everything he said seemed plausible. They even agreed to arrange some lunch for the weary travellers. Sometime later, after a slap-up meal of schnitzel and potatoes, Piers ordered a brandy, which was actually our cue to bolt out the restaurant while the waiter's back was turned, and make a sprint for the van. It was a scam I was soon to become very familiar with for the remainder of the trip.